time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Okay, and we're on again, and Fred Malone, my guest today, so stay tuned. Oh, and by the way, I've got three pairs of tickets to the entertainment for tomorrow night, and tomorrow being August 1st, yes, the SOS Band with Midnight Star. Any of you remember the SOS Band? How many of you know how to send SOS in Morse code?
The SOS Band.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so I tell you what, callers, if you want to go to that tomorrow night, I will take the first caller before I talk to Fred. Call me and give me your name, and I will give you a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's entertainment at the State Fair, 740-383-9944. And if you don't want to call, well, that's, you know, that's all right with me. Well, I got three pairs of tickets. Oh, my Fred, I should ask Fred, yeah, what's new?
Well,
oh my.
I remember the SOS pad, you know, now that you mention SOS.
Yeah.
Remember SOS pads?
Oh, I sure do,
Scrub
yeah.
your pots and sink and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, and you get that blue all over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, the not good news for the Marion County Historical Society is the accident that occurred yesterday morning. Not the way a lot of us want to start our day out, but the good news is no one was killed or seriously injured
in the
melee, and I guess the next good news would be that the building is shored up, so there's no danger of it caving in at the moment, and but there's quite a bit of destruction involved. I was out yesterday and looked it over, and a lot of the floor was destroyed, so I'm sure the whole floor is going to have
to be
replaced. Yeah.
What about the stove and other?
You know, remarkably, the stove was still in its original spot. So apparently, I thought when the truck went through it, it would shove those chairs.
Yeah, right.
You know, up into it, but by the time I got out there yesterday late afternoon, the chairs had all been moved up to the front of the building, and I think there are a number of them that were the desks. You know, a number of them that looked like they might have been destroyed.
How about blackboards?
Blackboards looked okay from what I could tell. The one on the south side of the building looked intact, and the big one across the front of the building looked intact. So, and I couldn't see, just looking in through the window, I couldn't see where any of the ceiling had caved in, so that part of it was good.
Well, that's good.
But it looks to me like that, you know, the entire floor is going to have to be replaced, obviously. And how many brick can be salvaged, I don't know. So that'll be an issue. Of course, Quality did the original work on the building,
and right away, weren't they?
Yep. And so you know, I'm sure that they'll salvage whatever brick is salvageable from the original structure, and then we'll just have to try to match the brick otherwise.
Right.
And you know, what do? You rebuild? Of course we rebuild. That's an iconic structure and something that we could not otherwise do. And, of course, you know, with this being an accident, why I'm sure there's going to be – and I haven't talked to Brandy since yesterday, so I can't give any details other than that. But I'm sure that the company that owned the truck's going to have to, you know, stand responsible for it after all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And looking back, looking down the road, coming going north on Route 4, it looks like the accident started three or four properties down. And I understand that there was, from what I've been able to piece together from bits and pieces of information I've been able to get, there was a witness that was following in a vehicle behind.
Oh, really?
And apparently a blown tire is the report that I'm getting at this point caused the issue. But you can see where the truck went off the road down into the ditch on the far side of the road. And then came back on again, went through somebody's yard and took a fence out. There was a fence out, a lot of deep ruts in the ditches, and probably just lost control. And, and remarkably, the sign, they missed a sign.
Yeah, missed that sign.
Right. That's the thing I thought would probably go out first would have been the sign.
Right.
But the sign was missed. And that was, of course, just sign just put in 2 years ago. That was done by a Boy Scout project. As I said, the good news is no one was killed or seriously injured, and the basic structure is still good. It's going to require a lot of work. Most of the windows were broken out, so you know we'll survive. We'll get by.
One thing: there are many people in Ohio today that know about the one-room school. They might not have known otherwise, but. That's kind of a crazy spinoff, but nevertheless, you might have a lot more people coming once it's restored.
Well, eventually. And, you know, Charlie, there really aren't that many restored one-room schoolhouses left.
Well, there's up around the corner is one.
Yep. We're fortunate here in our area. Probably we have more than any other area in the state of Ohio. There's one up by Findlay
that's
been restored.
In Crawford County.
There's one in Crawford County, right? There's one over in Richland County.
Okay.
But when you stop and add them up, if you go nationwide, there are a lot of places in the country that don't have any left over.
That's right.
And, of course, you know, at one time, 100 and some years ago, Marion County had dozens of one-room schoolhouses.
Yes.
You know,
I think
there was a count, and there were well over 80. I want to say
kids never walked 5 miles to school.
No,
at the most what 2 miles
well,
or less.
They claim that they were built so that no one had to walk more than a mile.
Yeah, okay.
Of course, that's cross country, obviously,
right.
But you stop and think how big some of the counties in Ohio are, and how many one-room schoolhouses there would have had to have been in Ohio at one time. But as I said, there are not that many that are totally restored like the Lynn School was.
I had on with me many, many times a one-room school teacher by the name of Bessie Hoflek. She taught it in Upper Sandusky. Oh, the name of that school escapes me now.
And there's a couple in Upper Sandusky that have been converted into residences, too.
Mm-hmm. And Bessie gave me quite a picture of what it was like to be a teacher when a lot of times teachers lived with one of the students' families.
Or in the schoolhouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, that happened quite frequently.
And Bessie said one day she left the house and could see smoke coming out of the chimney. Here, an itinerant fired up the stove for her.
Sure.
And when he...
That happened quite often. Of course, the people, the way the school got its name was the people that lived across the road's name was Lynn, and they provided the school teacher a place to stay.
Yeah.
So, and provided water. There was no water well on the property, so the water came from across the road. But in a lot of one-room schoolhouses, there would have been a wire strung across the middle of the schoolhouse, and at night, the teacher would pull the curtain across, and the back portion or the front portion of the school would be her residence. And there would be a small, what they would call a hired man's bed, or something of that effect there, single bed. And that's where the teacher would stay. Now, my grandfather, who graduated from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, back in 1901, taught in a one-room schoolhouse. So I got a lot of stories from him as he got older. You know, he was in his late 80s when he died, and you know, I was a teenager, so I was able to talk to him quite a bit, and still interested in history that far back. And he told a lot of stories about teaching in a one-room schoolhouse. And, of course, they taught up to 8 grades. They'd have 8 different grades in a one-room schoolhouse. And the younger kids, of course, would sit in the front, and you worked your way back. The farther back you went, you got back to the eighth grades. So very interesting.
Before I went to school, we had up to three grades in one room. It was a Catholic school, and we were limited on number of students, for one thing.
Sure.
So we were able to have three grades in one room, and it was interesting for the nun to divide her teaching in three different groups.
Well, and I bet you found this true. I know it was true in one-room schoolhouses. Oftentimes, the older children, the older kids, the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, would help teach the younger ones.
Yes, right.
Because, again, you never knew how many kids you were going to have at the beginning of the season. You may end up with 10 kids, or you may have 30 kids mm-hmm. in that one-room schoolhouse. So,
yeah, I ended up, there were only, two girls, I think, in my whole class. At the Catholic school, and one of them is still alive.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Right. Okay, so otherwise, anything else happening?
Well, yeah, you know, of course, and this is a sad thing that had to happen during the celebration of our 50th anniversary of the Marion County Historical Society.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The founding of the society was in 1969, so we are having that big milestone. And on Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 3rd of August, we are having our 50th anniversary open house at the museum. So you can come to the museum that day. There will be no charge. It will be open from 1 to 4, and we'll have some celebrations there. I think the commissioners are going to be there, or at least one of them is going to be there with a proclamation, and I would imagine that the mayor will probably make a visit, and we'll have a number of our board trustees will be there, and we'll have some characters there. I know Eber Baker will be there.
Really?
Of course, Eber Baker,
the founder
of Marion.
Yeah.
Will be there, and possibly some other individuals from Marion County's past. And, of course, next year, as part of the bicentennial celebration, we're working on developing individual characters representing, or individual people that will represent the founders of the various communities throughout Marion. So
really?
We'll have people like Milo Pettibone and Major LaRue and people like that. And we're planning on, if the individual communities are able to pull it together and set some dates, and we do already have some dates set, we'll have like an open house in a facility in the community, like say down at Waldo, maybe at the town hall building there. We'll have that open. We'll have some things in there from the museum that relate to Waldo. And then also we'll invite people in the community to bring things in that they want to share. And then we'll have Milo Pettibone there on hand to talk to people about the founding of Waldo and the various communities throughout the year. And those will take place, you know, starting probably in the early part of 2020 and run clear up through the end of the year. So we got a lot of stuff planned for that. But again, this Saturday, you're welcome from 1 to 4 to stop down at the museum and visit with us. We'll probably have some refreshments there. And take a look at the 1969 exhibit that is on display in the atrium at the museum. It's very interesting what they put together this year. Of course, you know, big part of it, celebration of the moon landing and the walking on the moon, and of course with Neil Armstrong's association with Wyandotte County, and having lived and gone to school in Upper Sandusky, why there's a big connection there.
I wonder if the Mohawk historian. The newsletter someday will have more of his story.
Well, I don't know what Kim's got in mind. I brought my most recent copy, the July-August issue. But knowing Kim, you know, I'm sure he'll probably have something.
Yeah,
because
right.
One of our, and boy, here's where your memory starts to fail when you start to get a little older. I don't remember the lady's name, but we had a lady that lived in Sycamore that actually taught Neil Armstrong in school in Upper Sandusky.
Right?
Yeah. And her name escapes me now, but she had some very interesting stories.
Ooh,
and I know, and I don't have the schedule with me. I didn't think to stick it in, but I know sometime this summer yet, Dr. Solikoff from Upper Sandusky went to school with Neil Armstrong.
No kidding.
And he's going to be giving they do a Thursday night programs every other Thursday at the museum in Upper Sandusky. And Dr. Solikoff is going to give a program on my friend Neil Armstrong and talk about their association growing up together in Upper Sandusky and going to school together.
That name rings a bell. I wonder if I didn't graduate with his wife. Doris Downing was her maiden name. Seems like her name now is Doris Sulico.
I don't remember what his wife's first name is, but that's entirely possible.
Yeah,
that's entirely possible. So, but you can go on the Wyandotte County, go on Wyandotte County Historical Society's webpage and check that out. And I don't think he's given that talk yet. It seemed to me like it was coming up either here in August or September. But they've had I've done a couple of programs up there for them over the years, and they have some very interesting programs. And I know that Kim Moore, the president of the Mohawk Historical Society, is going to be presenting a program on Mohawk history, the history of the Mohawk School District, of course, which takes in, you know, Melmore and Petersburg, Dunquot, Sycamore, you know, Eden
Plankton.
Township, Plankton, all those little communities up through there. He's going to give a program in, I believe it's October, up there. So that'll also be a good one to go to. In fact, maybe you and I can go up for that one. I think you'd probably enjoy that.
Good, yeah.
But go on the Wyandotte County Historical Society's website and check that out, because I think that program that Dr. Sulikoff is going to be doing will be kind of interesting.
Having gone to school with
Neil Armstrong.
I guess so.
Not everybody can make that claim.
Right. And Scott, you know, we hear so much about Bernie Sanders being a socialist, but actually one of the first big socialists to run for president came from right here in Marion, Ohio.
Oh, yes, Norman Thomas.
Yes, and did you know Norman Thomas also sold ice cream?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was the first ice cream socialist.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT. G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again.
We were talking about Charlie's monthly class reunion.
Yes, right.
Which is really kind of interesting.
It is. You know, a lot of schools get together so often, but it's kind of hard to pull kids together since they live everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But, I'm really happy that at least 14 or 15 of my classmates meet every month.
That's really nice. I celebrated my 50th high school reunion last year, and we meet every 5 years. And we discuss the possibility of starting to meet at least once a year now with our class. There were 178 in my class. We lost a few to Vietnam. And I think last year at our 50th reunion, we had, I think there were like 35 to 40 actual class members. And then, of course, with spouses and so forth, we had a crowd of around 75 or 80, which is a nice turnout.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, they're scattered to the four winds. And
and it seems like sometimes your local people are, they don't like to show up for reunions.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There were a number of people that still live locally that didn't even come to the 50th. Yeah. And I try to get to them all. I think I've missed one in the last 50 years.
Same with me.
Yeah. And because these people, I don't see these people. I see them once every five years. And it's nice to be able to reminisce and talk about what you were doing 50 years ago when you were still in school. Very enjoyable.
I was on our 67th reunion.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
That's amazing. Where does time go?
Time
talking earlier with Jeff, you work a job for 40 or 50 years or longer, and then you stop and think, where did the time go?
Yeah, it's all over.
You know, where did the time go?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's my birthday, and I'm thinking, where have the last 69 years gone, you know?
Right.
Unbelievable.
The way I feel.
Unbelievable.
It's a little more difficult for me now, getting to my last years. I operate on assisted oxygen. I could go so long without it, though, but it's nice to look up and see I still have 1,000 pounds of pressure in my
head. Yeah. Well, you know, and it unfortunately, it's something that we all have to face, you know. The aging process is something we can't escape, and And we're lucky that we can continue to go as long as we can.
And when I see people smoking, they said, when did you quit? And I said, 1983. Oh, they still consider me, I don't know, but as having a problem from that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Well, I smoked until 1994. And you say, think, wow, that's a long time ago. But really, they claim your lungs will come back to a certain degree, but you're always gonna have some damage there, depending on how long you smoked and how much you smoked. And so, I don't know. You just have to keep your fingers crossed and hope that things work out for you.
When I was younger, I tried smoking the strongest tobacco I could find, just to say I did.
Yeah. We don't realize how dumb we are when we're young. I know it took a long time for me to figure out how smart my mom and dad were.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know.
Boy.
But anyway, getting back to this open house.
Oh, yes.
Saturday from 1 to 4. This is the 3rd, Saturday, August the 3rd, this coming Saturday. Stop up at the museum if you don't have anything to do or you're looking for something to do. Come in and check out that exhibit. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. You know, they've got the big election from 68, Nixon taking office in 69, the hippies, the Summer of Love, Woodstock took place that year. Of course, the moonwalk, all the changes in fashion. The girls have done an absolutely wonderful job in putting this exhibit together. And, of course, it'll only be there for the balance of this season that we're open. So especially people that are, in their 50s and 60s and 70s that lived through this period of time, bring your kids and grandkids in that weren't around then so they can see what kind of stuff we wore, the bell-bottom pants and the wild flowery things that we wore. And
yeah, when I look back at those bell-bottom pants, I think I threw mine away. But
yeah, I have one pair left that I use when I do Elvis, my Elvis character.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But mine have long since gone away, too. But I think it'll be a lot of fun. That's this Saturday from 1 to 4. And that's the most recent thing coming up. And then on the following Saturday, on the 10th, that's our annual First Ladies Luncheon, or our Lunch with the First Ladies.
Oh, okay.
So we have four First Ladies this year. I have Mrs. Millard Fillmore. We have Lady Bird Johnson. We have Barbara Bush. And, now I've forgotten the fourth one. But anyway, there are four First Ladies there. Tickets are still available. They're $25. The lunch actually starts at 11 o'clock, and it will be out at Tri Rivers in the big room where the cafeteria is, where they have the pancake breakfast and the farmer's care breakfast. So that's where it'll be, 11 o'clock. You can still get tickets, but your time is running out. So you need to, if you're interested, call the museum no later than tomorrow, because they're going to cut it off tomorrow. And I know there are tickets still available for that. That's always a great event. The First Ladies will each have, 5-10 minutes to talk about what their life was like in the White House. Oh, I know the other one. The other one is the sister of Chester Arthur, McElroy. Her name was Catherine McElroy, or Kathleen McElroy. Chester Arthur's wife died before he assumed the presidency, because, he took over the presidency when Garfield was assassinated. And she passed away before he took over the presidency, so he asked his sister, Kathleen McElroy, to step in and serve as the White House hostess, or the quote-unquote First Lady. So she's the other speaker. So she has some interesting stories to tell as well. And then, of course, we do a buffet luncheon, and all the recipes for the foods that will be served that day are taken from the original White House recipes, and they are catered to what those particular First Ladies ate while they were living in the White House. So the menu is always great.
Oh,
always great.
Sure sounds good. Yeah, I want to pause for a moment. I've got three pairs of tickets to give away here. 7403-39944. If you want to go to the entertainment tomorrow night at the Ohio State Fair, I'll do the drawing here close to 11 o'clock. SOS Band and Midnight Star playing tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Three pairs of tickets are here. If you want these, give me a call. It's 740-383-9944. And on we go.
And just and call and interrupt. We don't mind. Yeah, not at all. We like phone calls. So yeah. Make some phone calls. And, of course, needless to say, Charlie, the Lynn School will not be open on the customary first and third Saturdays and Sundays for the balance of the season.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, as Tennessee Ernie Ford would say, God willing and the creek don't rise, why next year we'll maybe be back on schedule again. So. Yeah.
Good.
That's what's happening right now with Marion County Historic Society. A lot of effort being put forth toward this 50th anniversary celebration. And, of course, a lot of effort being put forth by the committee that's working on the bicentennial celebration that will take place, of course, all through next year, 2020. So keep listening and watching for any updates and any announcements for upcoming events for the bicentennial celebration next year. So.
Okay. Now, the Hamilton brothers, I've known them for, 60 years or more. They're such nice guys, and they contributed to the money to rebuild the school.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for Earl and Merle, that would have not taken place because they both went to school there. They both spent time in the one-room schoolhouse. And they were very adamant about saving it. And of course, they paid totally for the restoration of it and then turned it over to the Marion County Historical Society, lock, stock, and barrel, and left an endowment. In perpetuity to take care of the Lynn School. Every year we get a check from the Marion Community Foundation that was provided through that endowment from the Hamilton brothers.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm sure that they are looking down and they're saying, make sure you put that building back together again.
Yes. Merle's brother, Oliver.
Or Oliver, I said Earl.
I did.
Oliver and Merle, I'm sorry.
I did the last interview while he was still alive, and he was a lot of fun to interview. And I ought to donate that tape to the society.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I worked with Merle on the World War II monument. We were all in a group together to promote and to build the World War II memorial in the Marion.
Well, they were both very community-minded individuals, very, very community-minded. And, of course, which one's daughter lives just down the road from the schoolhouse? I forget. One of their daughters lives down the road from the schoolhouse, and of course, she's been very supportive of the schoolhouse effort. Yeah, they have the llamas down the road.
People that have the llamas down the road.
I forget the name of their business, but so anyway, a couple of things I wanted to mention today, Charlie. We'll talk about Mohawk and also Malabar too, but I take the Sunday Dispatch. I don't take the Marion Star anymore. My in-laws take it, and they pass it on to us a few days later. But I do take the Columbus Dispatch on weekends, on Saturday and Sunday. And a couple of weekends ago, it was just this past weekend, there was a big article in the Sunday Dispatch about the Piatt Castles.
Oh, really? Macachee
and Macacheek.
Right, been there.
Well, unfortunately, the family still owns and possess both of those properties. They're, 2 miles apart, something like that. But unfortunately, the one that looks like a castle, and I think that's Macachee, that was built in 1879 by Don Piatt, the family has decided to sell.
Really?
And there's going to be an auction this fall, and they're going to auction off that property. Now, their thoughts are, at this point, according to the article in the Dispatch last Sunday, is they're going to take the proceeds from the sale of the castle-looking one. And again, I think that's Macachee, if I'm looking at this right. They're going to take the proceeds from the sale of that particular property and put it into the other property.
Okay.
Oh, we got a phone call.
Yeah. Yes, caller, good morning.
Is it Judy Hamilton that lives down the road?
That's it, Judy, thank you.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, appreciate that. But they're going to take the proceeds from the sale of that one and continue the restoration and upkeep of the other building. The family's going to retain ownership of the other one. And the other one was actually built in 1871, so it was built a few years before the one that they're going to sell.
You know, I was in, I can't remember which one it was, but it's probably maybe in my imagination, but I thought, I can't remember the name of the poet, looked out and wrote "When the Frost Is on the Pumpkin."
He did.
Right?
He did. And that was, oh boy.
I didn't just dream
now,
that
no,
up.
No, you didn't. In fact, they have a up when you go, and it's in the one that looks like a castle.
Yeah.
And when you go upstairs in that particular room, they have a copy of that poem in there.
No kidding.
And I think there's a letter there from him.
Who
was that?
Oh, my land.
I can't. And I don't think it mentioned it in this article, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that is. There were a number of famous people that spent time, that stopped there and spent time there. But they've just decided that, you know, they just can't afford to keep up both properties. And my wife and I were there probably maybe 3 years ago. We went back again. I've been there a number of times over the years. But we went back about 3 years ago, and they had been trying to do some restoration work on it, but you could tell it needs an awfully lot. That building, with all the stuff
Ted, did you know President Harding's dog, Laddie Boy, had a gold collar?
That's not so unusual.
Really?
No, he had a golden collar. I have a golden voice. Tomato, tomato.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Three, two, one. Oh, no. Which button am I...
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear... Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone. Okay, and going back to the castle.
Yeah, so it is Mac-O-Chee. I just checked the article again. It is Mac-O-Chee, the one that's going to be sold, and that's the one that looks like the castle, and that was built in 1879. And so they're going to continue to do tours up through Labor Day, and then selected weekends in October until the sale. And the sale is, I'm not sure whether they list the actual sale date here for it or not. Yeah, it just says in October it's going to be auctioned off. So if you have not ever been to Mac-O-Chee or Mac-O-Cheek, either one, to the Piot Castles or Piot, I've heard it pronounced both ways.
Yeah, I have too.
I would suggest, especially if you have younger kids in your family, anybody really school age should see them. And since we don't know who's going to end up buying the property and what their plans might be for it, whether they'll open it up for tours or whether they'll choose to make a private residence out of it, you don't know. This may be your last opportunity to take a look at Mac-O-Chee before it sells.
Interesting.
So you've got through Labor Day at least, and they're open. I think they're open every day. You can go on there. They have a website. You know, just type in Piot Castles, and you'll be able to find their website. But I would suggest making a trip over there before Labor Day. So you've only got, a little over a month, because we don't know what's going to happen.
What are they famous for, then, in the interior?
Well, of course, the one that's going to be sold, it looks just like a European castle on site. If you remember, Charlie, you've been there before.
Yeah.
When you approach it from the outside, there's a picture of it in the article, you think, oh, my gosh, I've been in Europe, because it looks like a castle.
Right.
And, of course, the only thing it doesn't have is a moat around it. But when you walk in, the ceilings are like 25 feet high, and you walk in the huge doors, and of course you walk into this enormous hallway, and then there are, I forget how many rooms are in it, but there's like three floors plus a tower. And then another section that was built on later, that the last time I was over there, they were trying to restore and bring back to its original look, but they were having a hard time doing it because they didn't have the money. But most all the rooms are open. In fact, you can even go up in the tower. In fact, I think it was one of the tower rooms where that poet, where that poem was written. But there were a lot of famous people that came through there. Don Piatt was a statesman himself, and he was in the Civil War. He was an officer in the Civil War. So governors of Ohio spent time there. U.S. senators spent time there. If I remember correctly, one or two presidents came there. So it has a tremendous amount of history,
Maybe it would become a bed and breakfast.
You never can tell, but it would be an absolutely fantastic place for it.
It
really would be. But and most of the original furniture was in there. The family did lose the property or sold the property back in the early 50s, and then they reacquired it in 1957, and it's been basically in the same family almost since its inception. And the one that is being kept, Mac O'Cheek, that's never left the family. That's been in the family for three generations. Margaret Piatt is the lady that actually owns it now. And, excuse me, up by the castle, she has a home just off to the right of the castle as you're going up the driveway, and she still lives there on the property. So I don't know whether she's retaining that home or whether that'll be sold with the property, but she still lives on the property. And then she has a child, and I think it was a girl, that the property will go to when Margaret is no longer around. So their plans are to at least keep the one in the family.
That's interesting because I don't know what their traffic is like, but it takes a lot of money to keep up buildings.
Well, it does. And when we were there a few years ago, we kind of made a day of that area. We went over and went to the caverns, you know, the Ohio Caverns while we were over there. And I think those are the Ohio Caverns over there. But we went there, and then, of course, we went to both of the Piatt properties. So we made a big day out of it. But the day we were there, in the castle, I think Terry and I were the only two people in there.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't think these days they get as much traffic as they used to. The caverns get quite a bit of traffic. There were a lot of people there that day, but I don't know whether it's people just don't know about them or don't care about them or what the problem is.
It could be just probably don't care.
But it's a very integral part of Ohio history.
We have a caller. Yes, caller, go ahead.
Hey, Charlie.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys are talking about the castles. It's been years since I've been old that way. What road are they on?
If you go into West Liberty, there's a sign.
Yeah, I know going that way. So.
Okay, you go into West Liberty, and there's a sign there that shows you where to turn. I can't remember the name of the road, and it doesn't give it in the article, but if you have access to a computer and just type in the Piatt Castles, you can get the address for it. But if you just drive in, go in on 68 into West Liberty, there's a sign right there in the middle of the town, and it says Piatt Castles and Ohio Caverns, and you just turn onto that. It's a county road. I think there's a state route that runs out, and then you go off on a county road to get to it. But they're very easy to find. Very easy to find.
Yeah. Yep. I was thinking about it a while back because I wanted to take my grandkids over.
Well, you better take them over before Labor Day because we don't know what's going to happen to it. Yeah, don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. Very good. All right. 7403-39944. I've got three pairs of tickets to tomorrow night's entertainment at the State Fair. If you'd like to join in, give me a buzz. Okay.
So, again, you know, it's a very... A very important part of Ohio history because of who the Piatts were. And the manor house was built by Abraham, I think it's Abram Piatt, and that was actually built before the castle. And he was a farmer and a journalist. And, of course, then Don was an author, an editor, and a diplomat. I think he served... I want to say he served as a diplomat for Abraham Lincoln.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I believe. Yeah. So.
And their Civil War service might
be
interesting too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So the other thing that I noticed in the Columbus Dispatch, and this was back on Sunday the 7th, there was a big article about the celebration that's taking place this year over in Wapakoneta at the Armstrong Air and Space Museum.
Oh, okay. Okay, good morning, caller. Hello.
Are you there? Hi, yes, this is WWGH Radio.
Yes, it is.
I was looking to speak with someone who handles all the finances for that company.
Okay, well, I tell you what. Call later. We're on the air right now. You know, when I was in the hospital, I got 6 robocalls in one day.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, anyway, of course, we all know that this is the 50th anniversary of the walking on the moon, and we are so fortunate to have less than an hour away. We've got this beautiful Air and Space Museum that's dedicated to Neil Armstrong over in Wapakoneta.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And it's very easy to get to. Just hop on State Route 67, and that'll take you all the way over to 75. You get on 75, go southbound, one exit, and you get off, and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to get to.
I was there once on my bicycle.
Yeah, so easy to get to.
One thing, too, I noticed it appears his, well, it appears in the promo on Ohio. I just wish they'd have cleaned the sign. It's in concrete or cement. And it's kind of dull. It should have been brighter.
Well, we were over there in May. Terry and I went over to pick up a bus to go to a Cincinnati ball game for the weekend, and I noticed that they had cleaned that sign up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No kid.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So someone was on the ball for this 50th anniversary celebration.
But when they run that promo on Ohio,
yeah. Well, that promo was probably filmed. Yeah, you know, sometime back. But anyway,
that's good to hear.
Yeah, there was a big article in the Columbus Dispatch about it, and they featured that the suit that he wore aboard Gemini 8 is displayed at the museum, along with other things, of course, obviously. But 3 years of planning had gone into Wapakoneta's first on the moon 50th anniversary celebration. Now the actual big celebration ran from July 12th to the 21st, but obviously. The museum is open year-round, and, of course, the exhibits that are featuring the anniversary of the moon walk will be on display throughout the rest of this year. So do try to get over there. You can either call 419-738-2911, which is the museum, 419-738-2911, or you can visit www.firstonthemoon.org to find out more about what's going on over there. But I would strongly urge those people that have never been there to make sure they make a trip over this year, especially.
You know, I was really surprised to hear some of Armstrong's artifacts went up for auction.
There were quite a few things sold.
I wonder why.
Well, he has 2 sons that are both still living. Of course, sons are, you know, my age. And there were just so much stuff that they had buildings overflowing with it. And I read a big article about that, too, in the Dispatch about a year or two ago when they had this auction. They had 2 or 3 auctions. And the family went through and sorted out the things that they wanted to keep, and the other things that didn't have any particular sentimental value to them family-wise were put up for sale. And a lot of the money, then was earmarked for different foundations that would perpetuate, of course, Neil Armstrong's memory.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And I think they set up some scholarship funds and that type of thing. And then I just read an article in the Marion Star here this past week about a lawsuit that had been filed where the family received
million.
A $6 million payday. And I don't really know where that money's going to go, but and I forget now.
What were they suing about?
Well, I can't remember in general. I read
either.
The article. Now it escapes me. I can't remember what was involved in that. But anyway, yes, you're right. There were a lot of things sold. Christie's, I think, in New York handled some of the thing. There was also an online auction.
Oh.
There were 2 or 3 different auctions that they held to distribute some of this material around. And I think one of the items, there was a moon rock that he had picked up that he'd held on to for quite some time.
Wow.
And that sold for several $100,000.
I can imagine. You know,
but those are a couple of things that I noticed that I wanted to pass on to listeners to put on their
list for this year.
Their bucket list.
Their bucket list for this year, because those are things that aren't going to be around. You know, the Air Space Museum is always going to be there, but the things that they've got in there for just this 50th anniversary celebration will be gone. And then, of course, once that castle's sold, we have no idea what's going to happen to it after that. Hopefully, whoever buys it will be able to carry on the restoration work and reopen it for tours. But we don't know that.
That'd be great. Yeah.
You know, we don't know that. So.
Oh, and incidentally, going back to our first topic today, the Lynn One Room School, how much on the interior? Were there a lot of desks smashed?
Well, by the time I got out there yesterday to look, they had pushed all the desks up toward the front of the schoolhouse where the big blackboard is.
Yes.
So I couldn't really tell. What I could see in the back that looked that were towards the end of where they shoved them all up there, there looked like there were quite a few of them that were damaged.
I can imagine
so,
there would be.
And, of course, when they redid the school, I know they went all over the place trying to find those desks.
Yes.
And you can still find them. Willy-nilly and antique balls, but they're usually just like one.
Exactly.
I don't know. We may have to go on a search to find things. But like I said, the stove was still intact. So,
And those desks were the ones with the inkwells.
Yes, right, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And if you will remember, Charlie, the desks that were in the front of the building, when I say the front, I'm talking about where the teacher's desk would have been, where the big blackboard would have been. Those desks were smaller than the ones in the back, because the ones in the front would have had the first and second graders.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. From legendary comedian Orson Bean singing the Baloney Song.
Two Irishmen and a Hebrew, one went out for recreation, and they took enough provisions along to spend a week's vacation. But they got lost out in the woods, the nights grew dark and lonely, and at last all of their food ran out, except a piece of bologna. Now one of them said as he picked up a knife, there's no use in us carving, for if we do, there won't be enough to keep us all from starving. So I suggest we go to bed, and tomorrow, said Maloney, whoever has the nicest dream wins the piece of bologna. The following morning when they awoke, a quarter after seven, one of them said, I had a dream. I died and went to heaven. St. Peter met me at the gate riding on a pony. Now I don't think you can beat that dream. I win the bologna. The other one said, I had a dream too, and mine was a world beater. I also died and went to heaven. Welcome by St.